It's a pattern of behavior, and when it goes unchecked, it escalates and it can really end up hurting a lot of people.
After numerous claims of sexual harassment, Representative Dean Westlake announced his resignation. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 15th. Good evening, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, ConocoPhillips makes the case for drilling in an off-limits area of the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska.
We've been having conversations with the BLM about taking another look at that and see if some of that acreage can't be made available for leasing.
With stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance but think you can't afford it? Alaska's health insurance premiums are going down for 2018. If you need insurance or currently have insurance through the individual market, be sure to shop at healthcare.gov between November 1st and December 15th to confirm that you have the plan that best meets your family's budget and coverage needs. For local assistance, call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Dean Westlake of Kayana announced today that he will resign after several women accused him of sexual harassment. The first-term lawmaker said in his resignation letter, quote, "The conversation about my behavior has been elevated above the needs of my district, and that is not why I ran for office," end quote. He thanked the women for telling their stories and apologized for the pain he caused. Olivia Garrett is a former legislative aide and was the first person to come forward publicly with allegations that Westlake harassed her.
It shows that more and more so people who do these kinds of things are going to be held accountable for their actions. And it definitely shows that we're making progress. And I am thrilled to see that.
The Anchorage Daily News reported six other women alleged Westlake made unwanted advances and comments to them. KTUU-TV reported that more women alleged he harassed them before he joined the legislature. Westlake's district covers the North Slope and Northwest Arctic boroughs. District Democrats will nominate three people to fill the position. Westlake's resignation takes effect on December 25th. Then Governor Bill Walker will have 30 days to pick one of the nominees as his replacement. Senator Lisa Murkowski was one of the voices calling for Democratic Senator Al Franken to resign last week after several women claimed he groped and kissed them without consent. Murkowski said today she's not sure Congress can examine similar allegations against President Trump. Speaking to reporters in Anchorage, the senator said the president's accusers are now coming forward in a more directed way.
My sense is that that is going to continue to build. The role that we play in Congress for an investigation, this is one of the things that I've been trying to figure out is there a congressional role?
Murkowski and Senator Dan Sullivan had called for candidate Trump to quit the ticket last fall after the Access Hollywood tape emerged in which he bragged about grabbing women with impunity. For the third straight year, Alaska Governor Bill Walker has proposed a budget that would draw money from permanent fund earnings to pay for state government and reduce the permanent fund dividend. But this time, Walker left a nearly $500 million gap to be filled with other savings. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman has more details.
Governor Walker proposed a slightly smaller budget for this fiscal year that begins in July, with the portion of the budget that lawmakers focus on falling from $4.2 billion to $4 billion. Nearly half of the budget would be paid for through permanent fund earnings. But for the first time, administration officials say the earnings draw is necessary because the state's other piggy bank, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, is running low. The budget does add funding in one area, $34 million for public safety.
Alaskans don't feel safe. You know, they just don't feel safe with what's happening in crime. And so our goal is to improve that and increase their level of safety.
Walker proposed a permanent fund dividend of $1,216, which is more than the last 2 years, but less than the amount previously set by state law. The governor kept a proposal for a 1.5% tax on pay from employment, but he limited the tax to the next 3 years, and he said all of the money would be spent on deferred maintenance on public facilities. Walker also proposed some changes to how the state sets its budget.
There's no question the process is broken that we use in Alaska on budgeting.
Per diem payments to lawmakers would stop if they don't pass a budget in the 90-day session set by state law. Lawmakers' salaries would also be delayed if they miss this deadline, as would the governor's if the administration misses its December 15th deadline to propose a budget.
I think we need to give ourselves a pink slip before we give pink slips to other people.
Another change would shift the state to a two-year budget, in which the legislature would pass two budgets in 1 year and then make amendments to the second budget the following year. Walker also proposed paying off the tax credits the state owes oil and gas companies by selling bonds. The legislature will begin work on the budget when the new session starts on January 16th. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Oil development in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, is now dominated by one company, ConocoPhillips. Conoco controls over 1,000 square miles of the reserve, and it sees even more opportunity further west in the off-limits Teshikpuk Lake special area. Some groups think the whole area should stay protected, but Conoco has other ideas. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk reports.
Last winter, Conoco's Bob Albright took me on a tour of the company's Alpine facility on the North Slope. And it's not the easiest place to do a radio interview.
Pretty loud.
Sorry?
It's pretty loud.
Albright led me through a maze of roaring machinery, getting oil ready to send down the pipeline.
This is where all the oil comes into the facility, right here.
From all the fields, all the different fields?
From all the drill sites here.
One of the drill sites sending oil here is CD5, and today, CD5 is going gangbusters. When it came online 2 years ago, the company expected about 16,000 barrels of oil per day. Now, it's producing nearly double that. CD5 was the first oil production inside the federally managed National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. Conoco is spending billions on two more projects west of CD5, called Greater Moose's Tooth 1 and 2. Even deeper into the reserve, Conoco sees even more potential. The company announced a massive oil discovery there in January, a field that could produce more than 3 times more oil per day than CD5. This winter, Conoco aims to drill 4 exploration wells in the reserve and one just outside it. That, by the way, is a lot.
Yeah, that's big compared to any year. It's a pretty substantial program we have going on this coming year.
Scott Jepson is ConocoPhillips' Vice President of External Affairs. Jepson says between all the oil exploration and construction happening in the reserve this winter, Conoco is employing more than 1,000 workers. The Trump administration wants to continue this momentum. This year, it offered 900 tracts in the petroleum reserve at its oil and gas lease sale, the most ever. But here's the plot twist. Of those 900 tracts, Conoco only bid on 7. I asked Jepson why.
In NPRA, probably the most prospective acreage is due west of where we currently are.
And right now, that land is off limits to drilling, even though geologists see a lot of oil potential there. Conoco's leases are now pushing up against a boundary set by the Obama administration back in 2013. That line is about 20 miles from Teshikpuk Lake, a huge Arctic lake surrounded by habitat for migratory birds and caribou. Jepson says Conoco wants that line to shift.
We've been having conversations with the BLM about taking another look at that and see if some of that acreage can't be made available for leasing.
Jepson argues Conoco can pursue oil development near Teshikpuk Lake without putting caribou and bird species at risk. He says some parts of the area are critical habitat and probably should stay off limits.
But I think there are other areas that don't fall into that category and that we could demonstrate that we can safely develop those and develop them in an environmentally sound and sensitive manner.
The Trump administration seems ready to listen to Conoco. The Interior Department is reevaluating the Obama-era decision that more than doubled the size of the protected area around Teshikpuk Lake. But environmental groups are not happy that land could be back on the table again. Nicole Whittington-Evans with the Wilderness Society in Anchorage says the boundaries in place now set a good balance between oil development and habitat protection.
And if you start tinkering with it and shifting it, then you lose that balance.
Unlike the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to the east, the National Petroleum Reserve is a place where environmental groups have been willing to compromise. Whittington-Evans says her group doesn't oppose oil drilling in a lot of the reserve.
But in places where the ecology is so important and where species really depend on an area, we just don't think these are appropriate places for the oil industry to be able to develop. And the Teshupuk Lake Special Area is one of those places.
Conoco's ask to open up more of the reserve to oil development is being weighed in Washington, D.C. The Department of Interior will make the final decision. But Interior hasn't said when that decision will be made. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a generation of nurses train at a camp in Bethel.
My mom was going to nursing school, and I wanted to follow through her footsteps. And when she told me she couldn't finish, you know, that's going to motivate me through.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
In an unprecedented move by regulators, one of the biggest makers of edible cannabis products has been stripped of its license. Fairbanks' Frozen Buds was one of the first legal cannabis businesses to open in the state. Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office Director Erica McConnell says after today, Frozen Buds holds another important distinction.
The Marijuana Board, they've had some disciplinary actions for various types of violations, but they've never considered a license revocation before and have never revoked a license.
Frozen Buds is known for supplying popular edible products to retail shops around the state. Items with names like Canna Banana Bread, Toker Chai Tea, and Dank Chip Cookies. The company has a separate retail license for a shop in Fairbanks, which is not affected by the board's revocation decision. State officials issued a suspension earlier this month at Frozen Buds' manufacturing facility for a range of alleged violations. Those included selling thousands of untested edibles, some of which contained mold, and others that state investigators found to contain 2 to 3 times the legal limit of THC, the psychoactive component in cannabis. McConnell, the AMCO director, says Frozen Buds is also alleged to have allowed on-site consumption at its premises and delivered products directly to consumers, both of which are illegal. In an effort to prevent black market pot from making it into the legal market, regulations require precise tracking of marijuana products from seed to sale. McConnell says that is not what's happening here.
It was like those edibles appeared out of thin air. Now, it's possible that that's just a mistake in the tracking system, but if you were doing a good job with your inventory management, you would have found this mistake and then you would have been able to go back and correct it.
In an interview this week with the Associated Press about the initial license suspension, Frozen Buds owner blamed the discrepancies on computer software problems. Frozen Buds did not respond to a request today for further comment. Along with $500,000 fine, the control board ordered the seizure of all of Frozen Buds' products around the state. The Alaska chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union is raising the alarm about what it characterizes as a raid by federal immigration authorities in Anchorage. The ACLU says Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents arrested at least 5 people in Anchorage this week, none of whom appear to have participated in any criminal activity. That would be a departure from Obama administration policies that only targeted those facing criminal charges. It also seems to represent a new development in ICE's policies within Alaska under the Trump administration, which earlier this year saw 4 people with prior criminal convictions detained in Anchorage. ACLU legal and policy director Tara Rich refused to talk about specifics in the more recent detentions, but she says such raids in Alaska are unusual, and they often occur at a person's home or workplace.
These are often fraught with violations of Fourth Amendment and privacy rights, as well as the rights to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures.
Rich says regardless of a person's immigration or citizenship status, they still have civil rights, including the right to an attorney. ICE public affairs officials did not respond to multiple requests for comment. With warmer waters, lots of changes are coming to marine ecosystems in the Bering Sea. A group of marine scientists visited Western Alaska recently to discuss the results of a second spottom trawl survey in northern waters. KNOM's Gabe Colombo reports.
The team is with NOAA's Alaska Fisheries Science Center, based in Seattle. This round of research comes 7 years after their first survey of the area in 2010.
We were really quite surprised and shocked at what a big difference there was.
That's Bob Loth. He's a research fishery scientist, and he leads the Bering Strait Survey Program. This summer, his team used a large trawl net to survey and identify species in the northern Bering Sea. Among the results, the pollock population jumped by 6,000%, and there were also large increases in Pacific cod and smaller snow crab species. According to the surveys, the water is warmer than it was in 2010, so cold water species like saffron cod were much sparser, with Arctic cod numbers down 90%. There were also higher populations of jellyfish and sea stars, which are called keystone species because they help to structure marine ecosystems.
In an area where you may have concerns about, you know, food supplies for marine mammals and walrus and whatnot, something like an increase in sea stars could be something we really want to track.
That's Lyle Britt, a fisheries research biologist on the team. He says the warmer water has caused a shift from a bottom-up ecosystem centered around the sea floor to a top-down one with more activity higher up in the water.
When you have two that are just so diametrically different, it's really hard to say, you know, is this a trend or is this more like a weather event? We just don't know now.
Britt hits on a key footnote of the findings. The team needs more data to accurately describe what's changing. Jeff Knapp is director of the Resource Assessment and Conservation Engineering Division at NOAA. He says it's about identifying larger processes within the ecosystem.
Is the change that we saw last year really tied to the ice, or is it tied to something else? You know, what things change first, what things change more slowly? It's those mechanisms that we really want to be able to discover so that we can do a better job of predicting and then communicate that along the way to the people living here, the people who are reliant upon, you know, the resources.
While they're in Nome, the team is meeting with representatives at Kowarik, the Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation, and other regional organizations. They're also teleconferencing with leaders from some of the Bering Strait communities that are most dependent on these marine ecosystems, places like Gamble, Savunga, and Wales. And they plan to send their report to all the tribes in the region. For now, the team says the increase in fish they saw this year doesn't necessarily mean commercial fishing for pollock could start anytime soon in the Bering Sea. Here's Britt again.
Given how mobile we know pollock can be, this could be an ephemeral thing. They're here this year and they're not coming back, or they're here to stay. We really don't know. And even if conceptually, say, this area was open to fishing and there was interest, I think the time it would take even a company or something to even set up to do such a thing is going to be a number of years. And they'd want to know that these fish are truly going to be here for the long term before they'd even try.
But if the funding is there, the scientists say, and they're able to start doing surveys every other year, that answer could become much clearer as soon as 2019. Reporting in Nome, I'm Gabe Colombo.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Lac-Mégantic.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, calling all nurses. 20 years ago, the University of Alaska Anchorage created a program in the hopes of training and hiring more Alaska Native nurses. The program is called RAN, Recruiting and Retaining Alaska Natives into Nursing. Over a recent weekend, RAN held a camp in Bethel for high schoolers to show them how they, too, can enter the field. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur has more.
Where are we giving this medication?
Intramuscular.
The place is Utlet Navet, Bethel's adult workforce training center. The needle is a 23-gauge, the dosage 2.5 milliliters of morphine, and the target...
So imagine this is an entire butt cheek.
Bethel Regional High School junior Hunter Dole raises his needle. The morphine is actually saline solution, and the butt cheek a slab of rubber.
You're going to feel a slight pinch.
We'll put one, two, three, and then in.
At a 90-degree angle.
90-degree angle.
His instructors are University of Alaska Anchorage nursing students who are studying in Bethel. Hunter Dole hopes to one day do this work for real.
I never would have thought I'd ever inject something into someone until now, where it just became reasonably more visible in my future.
And that's the point of this RAN camp. To give high schoolers the hands-on experience they need to see themselves as nurses and to offer them the tools and guidance to get there.
So which side is your heart on or mostly on?
At another table, a group is learning how to check for a pulse.
Always, always best to listen for a whole minute.
Each student unwraps a stethoscope to keep. One writes on hers, Dr. Paul.
My name is Bria Paul from Quiglingag, Alaska, just down the coast.
Paul is a high school junior. She wants to go into medicine to help people in villages like hers that are far from hospitals. She made the decision when she was 10 years old.
My grandpa was very, very sick, and he was stuck in the village, and the weather was so bad, and the planes couldn't go there.
For Tuntutuliak High School junior Katia John, helping her grandmother and then her mom through their cancers drew her to nursing.
I like taking care of her because I had more time with her, and it felt good helping someone else.
Both John and Paul want to provide their nursing care in UPIC.
So one of the most beautiful things about teaching in Bethel is when we get students who are fully UPIC speaking or even partially UPIC speaking.
Rochelle White teaches nursing in Bethel with the University of Alaska Anchorage. She says having a UPIC speaker giving care makes a big difference, especially with elders.
There's just such a change in the demeanor of the patient. I mean, the patient who seems a little scared and quiet or whatever, all of a sudden lights up, and they just begin to speak UPIC back and forth with each other, and it's a beautiful thing.
What size gloves do you wear?
Small.
Okay.
White's eight nursing students stand out in their green scrubs as they instruct the high schoolers. Melody Hoffman is one of the nursing students. She grew up in Bethel and is in her second semester of the program.
When I graduated high school, I knew I wanted to be a nurse. I definitely, but I was kind of lost. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know exactly what classes to take.
That was 10 years ago. Hoffman says if she had gone to a camp like this and gotten connected to RAN earlier, things could have been easier.
Then I would have been a nurse years ago, probably.
RAN provides support, tutoring, and scholarships. Three seniors who attended the camp are already heading to University of Alaska Anchorage in the fall as nursing pre-majors. Matthew Hunter from Bethel Regional High School is ready to go.
As I was younger, my mom was going to nursing school, and you know, I wanted to follow through her footsteps, and when she told me she couldn't finish, you know, that's going to motivate me through the way.
And RAN will be there to help. For AK, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Now it's time for 49 Voices, and we're staying in the medical field. This week we're hearing from Alexandria McLaren in Anchorage. On Sunday, McLaren will give the UA commencement speech for the fall 2017 ceremony, and she hopes someday to become a doctor.
I studied science. I was a natural science, or I guess I still am, a natural science major. In my second year, I picked up minors in Alaska Native Studies and Psychology, you know, because I want to be a doctor, and I want to be a doctor in Alaska, so to me that made a lot of sense. My grandma is from, or was from, Chivac, so that makes me a quarter Chubic, And I grew up with her and grew up in this context of, you know, taking care of your own, taking care of your family. I was 6 years old when my grandma told me that I was going to be a doctor, and I was like, yeah, you're probably right. Being a doctor in Alaska for me means taking care of the people that raised me and taking care of the people that, you know, provided a life for me that was full of opportunities. And so to me, it makes sense to be here for them as well. So my speech, I hope my classmates like it, but it's not really for them. I talk about failure. I make mistakes, but I keep going. Even when I'm not sure that this is something that I can do, I pursue it. And I either flop or I thrive, and most of the time I thrive. I want to be a traveling doctor. I want to help the villages. I want to go there and learn their strengths, learn their weaknesses, and help provide a better healthcare system. So that's like this big overarching goal of becoming a doctor for me.
Alexandria McLaren lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Anna Rose MacArthur and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we are online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. Weird reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Harbaugh and Casey Grove in Anchorage, and Gabe Colombo in Nome. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ExxonMobil Alaska. Their financial investment and partnership with local companies at Point Thompson helps contribute to Alaska's economy and jobs for Alaskans. ExxonMobil, energy lives here. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska is now through Friday, December 15th. Enrollment assistance is available and it's free. Visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.